Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Anyone else? Any questions, or are we good to start?
I'm good.
I'm good.
How are babies made?
Shut up. What's up, everybody? This is the SML Pod. I'm going to have to keep that in, aren't I? Jacob, you're the worst. Jacob's here. Aki's here. Lady Magritte is here. Bree, how are you doing?
I want you all to know that I like you so much and care about the quality audio that I turned off my much needed air conditioner.
You don't have to do that.
Oh no. No, turn that on. We don't want you dying on us.
I will be fine for an hour and then it's going back on. It's fine. But yeah, I'm hot. It's good.
Yeah, though. I can agree with that.
That's ballsy. Yeah. That is Jacob?
Sorry. Aki was just Bree was like, I'm hot, and Aki was like, I know.
And yeah, I'm just being
and I'm just
me,
like
I was just gonna laugh it off. You had to like stop and pause and make that a whole thing.
See, it flew over my head because I'm so used to Aki. Anyway, we have guests joining us today. More important things are happening. We have actual guests joining us today. Matt Rathel and John McCullough from Graphite Lab. First off, did I get the names right? And second, how are you doing?
Nailed it. And I'm also hot. Smoking hot, in fact.
Nice.
But doing fine.
If you say so.
Yeah, doing good.
Yeah, the name was perfect, and I'm actually, I got my AC blowing. I'm actually quite cold.
Show off.
Lucky.
Yeah, my AC broke. Thankfully, I have good friends. I have a portable air conditioner, but it's really loud, so yeah.
How loud is it? Like, if you turn on, will we hear the diesel engine chugging?
I feel like it would be too loud, so yeah. I'm going to be good. I'll be good.
Now I'm curious. You had you have a really loud air conditioner, and now I'm curious to see how loud this son of a bee is.
I'm not turning it on. It's fine.
I thought you were turning it on. So anyway, Matt and John, you were here to talk about your game, Mr. Run and Jump, just launched on all platforms. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch. What's going on?
John, take it away.
Yeah, sure. Mr. Run and Jump is a fast-paced precision platformer wherein you, the player, takes control of the titular Mr. Run and Jump, who's kind of this abstract character who is, you know, I like to think of him as like the personification of all things running and jumping, you know, and he's a character. He lives in this world known as the Realms of Color. And he is a dog named Leap, and the game is, it kind of does what it says on the tin, you know. It's all about running, and it's all about jumping. And
I was so confused. I thought it was a romance simulator.
No, that's a sequel, Mr. Hug and Kiss. But
sweet,
make it please.
World exclusive.
Do it.
But yeah, the game is based off of it was a side project I was doing. I work for Matt at a company called Graphite Lab, I guess. But, you know, on the side, I was working on this as an Atari 2600 homebrew project. So Mr. Run and Jump started life as a platformer for the Atari 2600 that I would kind of poke at in my spare time. And so, you know, that game exists, and, you know, when it was kind of about done, we showed it, you know, we had this kind of growing relationship with the company Atari, and we showed it to them, and they really liked it, and we wanted to take it further, so we kind of cooked up this pitch for them, this quick pitch, and sent it their way, and we said, hey, you know, we want to take this kind of classic game as the foundation, and, you know, hey, what if we turned it into, you know, have you played Celeste? What if we tried to, you know, turn it into something like that? Not that we just purely aped Celeste, you know, I don't want to give the wrong impression, but sometimes, you know, you're selling something to somebody. Anyway, so Run and Jump is kind of a game, you know, that exists in these two forms. There's the classic version, and then there's the modern version for modern consoles and PC.
Well, let's talk about the classic version first. You said it was a homebrew project. How did it go from homebrew to... Isn't it on the Atari Anniversary Collection? I thought someone mentioned it was included.
It is not. I've seen a few people tag that online, but it's not. Yeah, it's. I think people are getting confused by that point.
Is it released independently?
The game hasn't been released at all yet. So far, the only official release is going to be the... it's coming out as part of the Atari XP program, and it's getting printed to physical cartridges.
That might be where my information got mixed up.
Yeah, I've seen a few posts there where I think it got confused and then shared around. But yeah, it should be going up for pre-order end of this month. And then you can get it on the official cartridge, which is a heck of a history footnote to be able to do that with Atari.
An honest-to-God Atari cartridge.
No joke.
Yeah,
that is cool as hell.
Now, is that going to be like limited edition or?
Yes, like, how does that work? Will be kind of a collector's edition. The actual like units and some of the specifics there are going to get posted on Atari's website, I believe. So it's really kind of the best place to stay tuned. But as part of their XP program and as a collector's edition, I believe it'll be a limited edition. Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So how, again, you started as homebrew, and now it is way beyond an Atari 2600 game. It's got, like, actual graphics and sound effects and music, which is vastly different than you would find in an Atari game. how did it convert from 2600 over to modern consoles?
I think it's the idea for the modern version kind of came to me while we were working on another game. Graphite Lab made another game for Atari called Combinera. And if you look at Combinera, you know, it's like this puzzle platformer.
Mm-hmm.
Where you control like this like series of circles on screen, and the goal is to merge them all together. But anyway, like that game has a similar kind of a glow to it, kind of a heavy post-processing effect layer applied to it. It's not quite as neon maybe as Mr. Run and Jump, but I was looking at that game and I'm like, you know, like this game looks great, you know. It kind of got the wheels spinning of like, you know, if we took kind of my thing that I was working on, like the, you know, my classic, you know, 2600 game. And I'm like, you know what, you know, it was a thing I could really just easily visualize. I'm like, oh, I could see we take that character, kind of put it into this, you know, Combinera world and apply these effects. I'm like, this would look really, really sharp. And with
crank
that,
up the
like,
bloom and boom, you got a game.
Kind of, right? Like, you know, the original game is very simple, right? But the mechanics do translate really nicely to kind of the modern perception of a precision platformer. You know, it has like the one-hit deaths and kind of the easy to kind of pick up and play, you know, just jump and run and dodge enemies and things like that. So I could really see, like, you know, it was looking at Combinera and it was thinking about games like Celeste and like Super Meat Boy and things like that. And I just really saw, like, you know, this path emerge before me, you know, and with our growing relationship with Atari, it's just like, you know, in a way, it really just kind of felt like the planets aligned for Mr. Run and Jump, where it's just like, this is just... It was just an easy pitch, you know, really just the end product was really clear to me, I think, at the outset.
It really surprises me as well that no one ever used the name Mr. Run and Jump before.
Yeah, I...
It seems like such a great name for a video game, and it's been this long.
Yeah, when I started working on it, I called it, it was called Jump and Run, kind of the, a little more generic of a title, but it does turn out that basically every version of Jump and Run is taken by something else. You know, there's, you know, Run and Jump, there's Jump and Run, there's the, you know, instead of and, it's like the apostrophe N, you know, it's just like every possible permutation is taken by something. So I'm like, well, you know, when I look at this game, what I think is really unique about it is the character. You know, he's kind of this blobby little guy with this big snout. And at the time, he didn't have a name, so I'm like, you know, if I can name this character and then title the game after the character, that would be a perfect thing. And yeah, I think doing, you know, calling a game Mr. Something, Mr. Blank, is such like a charming kind of old video games thing to do, you know, or I'm thinking of like, you know, Mr. Domino or, you know, Mr. Do or, you know, Mr. Driller, kind of that milieu of
no video one will game. Stop Mr. Domino.
Yeah, definitely.
It's really cool to see how it's transformed, especially in the game, where the very beginning of the game basically is a 2600 game, and you get lulled into a false sense of security, and then shit goes haywire.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really proud of that intro sequence, I think, because I did that personally, and I took everything I know about the 2600 and I tried to emulate it as close as I could. In fact, there are things I could have done, like the enemies in the modern version don't flicker like they do in the 2600 version, but but otherwise, like in terms of like how the character moves and how the screen transitions and how the enemies go back and forth, like it's all like as close as I could get it. And then the modern version is really more of like a pseudo sequel to Mr. Run and Jump, you know, not that like the story or the lore is like super deep or meaningful, but that's why we have kind of that opening, is to kind of show the transition from, you know, yeah, hey, we're in the, you know, the classic version of the Realms of Color. And then, yeah, here's this rip in the fabric of space time, and then it blows open, and then whoops, like now we're here in the, you know, the new, you know, neo modern version of the Realms of Color.
Jacob, did you get much time with the game?
I mean, I played it for a bit, yeah.
What are your thoughts on things? Chime in here.
I mean, I think it's
useful.
I think it's pretty interesting.
You're asking for an awful lot there.
No, I know.
I don't know. I really enjoyed the guide, Mr. Oh shoot,
that's Mr. Watch and Learn.
Yes, Watch and Learn. Thank you. I was
that's cute.
For some reason, I wanted to call him Sight and Sound, and I was just like, that's not right at all. But yeah, like I don't know. I just like I really liked how there was all these different characters, and it was just, you know, I mean, my time with like those retro like Atari 2600 games is very limited. And so like I thought that this was like a fun, not exactly like introduction for some people, but I mean like my kids are like going to be able to pick up and play this, like experience, like get that kind of experience with the old stuff, but then get something that they're more familiar with.
Sure. What an ass kicking. This game gets tough.
Yeah, I mean it does, but I mean the thing is that I mean with so many retro games, I mean like that was part of the allure of it, with just how tough it was, you know, you gotta keep seeing how you can get to the next part, and thankfully save points are plentiful throughout this game, so sure. So
yeah, that is one of the modern assistances that you put in the game. There is an option. The default, I believe, is infrequent, but there's also the option to have frequent assistance via either checkpoints through the level or invincibility spells. What made you put in stuff like that to alleviate the difficulty for, I'm guessing, for younger players or for people who don't have patience?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I I think Mr. Run and Jump is, you know, as a character and as a setting and as a world, like, does have, you know, could have pretty wide appeal, you know. I think I want people who, yeah, look at the game and, you know, do want to get in there and do want to play it and see it, you know, I want them to have, like, a fighting chance, you know. You know, at the outset, I mean, the classic game is pretty hard too, but, like, at the outset, we didn't necessarily set out to make, like, oh, I want players to scream at their TV, you know, like, you know, it just kind of turned out that way, more or less, right? Like, it was just kind of a natural consequence of the mechanics that we put in there, you know, with the one hit kills and the, you know, just kind of the precision nature, you know, the complexity of the number of enemies on screen and how they mesh together. So it's like, you know, we get like 6 months into development or whatever, and it's like, this game is really hard. Like, you know, and it's like, you know, I love the game, right? Like, I really, it is in a way kind of catered to my tastes, right? As I was kind of game director on this project, but so I do like a challenge. I play a lot of platformers, and I do really like, you know, I do really like how engaging this game can be. But yeah, I'm like, you know, I can absolutely imagine people who are like, yeah, you know, I love the look of this game and I want to play it, but man, I just can't. Especially, like, I feel like platformers aren't quite as, they're not quite as the standard as they were, you know. I feel like back in, like, you know, the NES or the SNES days or whatever, like, you know, platformers were kind of like the default genre.
Yeah.
And just, like, everyone was playing, you know, everything had some amount of, like, side scrolling or running and jumping or whatever. And that's just kind of not really the case anymore. Like, platforming is almost kind of a niche genre. You know, outside of, like, the Nintendo milieu. I mean, the
classic,
you
know, traditional platforming, it really is something that you just don't see pure platformers anymore. It's like an action platformer or a puzzle platform. It's not mm-hmm. just like get from here to here and stay alive.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like there's probably a whole, like, class of indie game, you know, that just isn't quite surfacing, you know, and we're just not seeing that is platformer or puzzle platformer or whatever. But yeah, it's in a way, it almost kind of caught me off guard when we'd kind of show the game around, or we get, like, testers in or whatever, and just, like, people's kind of, you know, people who are, you know, younger than me playing the game and being like, oh yeah, like, you know, oh, I've never played a platformer before, or oh, Celeste was my first platformer, or, you know, I've played a Mario game in the past, but that was about it, you know. And it's just like, man, you know, I feel like growing up, it's just like everything I was playing was, you know, a platformer of some description.
When I was talking with some younger kids today, and the fact that they'd played, like, Mega Man on the NES as, like, a reference of platformers, I was like, yeah, I guess Mega Man really is. And then it opens you up to, yeah, what John was saying of how many of them there were, you know, back then. But something else I've noticed is, like, the difficulty in this game, I think, also comes from some players' perceptions that they can just, like, go run and bop through it like they're Mario or something and kind of not care. But if you take a moment and kind of understand the carefully crafted obstacles and levels, like, there's a bit of a, there's definitely a pattern there, and there's a move set that makes things really smooth. So, you know, if anybody is having, like, painful challenge with the game, this is one where, like, think about how you're going to go through these challenges, and you can almost, like, crack the code in a way and see through to the matrix. And, like, I think you can get through stuff a bit easier if you, you know, think of it through that lens. So
I think John, I think we're getting a little bit of an echo through your audio channel.
Ooh, I'm sorry. Here I can find some headphones. 1 minute.
Sorry about that. So how's the weather?
Miserable. I walked outside for my appointment, and I was just like, I'd rather shoot myself right now than fucking go to the appointment. It's too hot out. I hate it.
It peaked It says it peaked today at 99, but my car was telling me it was 109.
Oh, that's gross.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, yeah, it looks like 100 here. We're in St. Louis. So it's pretty toasty, swampy.
Hey.
It's pretty hot.
I have a friend who lives out that way in Alton, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just on the other side of the river, but yeah, still feels like it's in that St. Louis bubble a lot of the time.
I don't know if he still works for him or not, or if they're even still around, but I used to love visiting him and going to Slackers.
Like the gaming, like resale shop type of place?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Slackers sold out to V-Stock, and V-Stock is still present. I could be totally wrong about that. That might be because it'd be something John knows, because he and I go to V-Stock and these different conventions. There's a gaming convention in St. Louis this weekend, all retro games, that sort of thing. But I thought a lot of the Slackers locations got sold through to V-Stock. But I wouldn't be
shocked. It's been years since I've been out that way.
Yeah.
And I've been talking about possibly going to visit my friend out there again, because a band that I follow is based out that way called Gravity Kills.
Yeah, man.
And there's talk of them possibly reuniting or doing a show or something. And if they are, I'm driving the fuck out there.
I saw them headline my very first Point Fest.
You saw Gravity Kills?
Yeah.
Oh, I am jealous. That is awesome. Tell me about it.
And they did great. It, these Point Fests, you know, it's a big festival show, and they always like to get some local group to like, you know, headline the thing. But they'll be, you know, there's Blink-182 and Pearl Jam, and everybody else are playing during the day, but Gravity Kills closed the show. And, you know, they're good energy, and, you know, it's, you know, the music scene here in St. Louis, it's a lot of like jazz roots, blues roots. So to have something like Gravity Kills come through is not, this is not where you'd expect it to come from. But yeah, man, it was a good show.
I'm like so excited that someone else knows who Gravity Kills is.
Hey man, they got on the Mortal Kombat soundtrack back in the day. Man. And,
Seven, they were on Seven. Guilty played in the credits, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's the one.
Good stuff. But yeah, there's talk they might be doing something. It was supposed to be announced on the 24th, and then they were like, something came up. We got to push it to August. So now I'm still waiting to find out what's going on with them. But
right on, man.
It means a new show. I'm going out that way. I'm not going to miss it.
Cool.
Okay, how about now?
Testing.
Much better.
Yeah, sounds pretty good.
Seems good.
Sweet.
Beautiful.
We are good to go. Where were we? Well, we were talking about Gravity Kills, but are you familiar with Gravity Kills?
I can't say that I am, no.
Shame.
There was also that restaurant that you needed to talk about, whatever it was.
It wasn't Slackers. A restaurant. It was like a...
Oh, Slackers.
Game. Yeah.
Yeah,
video that. Games, music, movies. Just an awesome store.
Oh, yeah. Slackers, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think...
I don't think there's one here anymore, John. I thought, did they get chewed up by like V-Stock?
I thought there was one in the same mall that V-Stock is in. I remember going in one maybe like 9 years ago or something like that. You know, it's been a long time.
It's been about as long for me.
Yeah, I think V-Stock's kind of got the monopoly here in St. Louis. If they were around at some point, I don't know if they are anymore, but yeah.
It's a shame. I like Slackers. Cool store. Then in Alton, the mall that's right near there was a little eatery called Olga's. I don't know if that's still there or not.
I'm not down that way very frequently at all, so I'm not familiar with it, and I couldn't tell you on that one.
It was like gyros and stuff like that, like all like lamb products, and it was really good stuff. There's cool stuff out that way. It makes me want to visit again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to get 101 temperatures, but you come out anytime. Still good. I always say, still sunny out here in St. Louis. St. Louis and Philadelphia, I guess.
I'm close enough to Philly, so about 2.5-3 hours from there. So Mr. Run and Jump, tell us more about this game. What do you have to do to stand out these days and make people notice your game?
Oh, man.
Man, I wish I knew.
Well, look, This will be my 20th year making games. And when I started, it was retail. So you put it in a box and you get the right buddies to do the logistics. And hey, you snuggle up to Walmart and Target. And all you got to do is get behind the glass. It's harder to get back there for sure. But once you're back behind the glass, hey, you're gonna get it. You'll sell some units. But it's risky because if you spend to get behind the glass and it doesn't sell, man, you're left with tons of packaging and, you got to do buybacks and stuff. So when I started, it was all about getting those retail connections. And now if you had, 100,000 units in a couple of regional Walmarts, yeah, it's still good visibility, but so much has changed in the last 15 years going digital. And so much has changed getting tools like Unity and Game Maker and other, accessible game engines to where you can make games quick and distribute quick, that there's more games coming out, which I really think is a benefit for the industry. But you have to stand out in more unique ways, and you have to work. I think you have to grind a little bit more in the right way to get in with the right markets or connect with the right audience. I still think, getting on the major storefronts is huge. Having a Switch game, having a PlayStation game, versus like trying to sell it on your website or some such, right? So there's still a lot of value in pushing through to those major stores. But if we had strategies that we used our last game, Combinera, the game before that, Hive Jump, a lot of those strategies have to change. TikTok wasn't around, we did our first game. Kickstarter was popular then, but it's not as much now. Connecting with paper press was still valuable in 2015, but like getting paper press as a target now isn't as valuable as, say, getting, interviews like this one or others to help spread the word. So it's definitely shifting. So I don't think there's like any one silver bullet. And of all the marketers I talk to and all the developers I talk to, every year we have different strategies. Every year we have different tools, different metrics, or different promotional tactics that work better than they did the year before. So it's always changing. I wish there was like one magic thing, but it's not getting into retailers and getting behind the glass. Like, it was just that one strategy 20 years ago, and it's not that anymore. It's a bunch of things.
And to give a quick shout out to Hive Jump that you mentioned, my buddy Jimmy did the music for you guys.
Yeah, Jimmy Hinson. I haven't talked with Jimmy in a while, but that was that's another one too. If you get, Jimmy's got a big audience. Like, he's been active in the OC Remix community. That's where I found him, and we had some of our team members on that game that worshipped him. Like, oh, this is the man, right? So if you get some of your contributors that have existing audience, that can help you, get buzz and stuff like that. So, but yeah, Jimmy's great. It's been a long time. But if he listens, hey, Jimmy.
oh, no, thanks for your help. Don't worry about it. Who'd you get for the music on Run and Jump?
So this is a duo who actually worked on Hive Jump. So a team called Fat Bard, Pat Cresselius, and a partner with him, Zach, and another partner, Andy, that works on with their group. They did the sound design for Hive Jump, believe it or not. They're here in St. Louis, and they've done a lot of our games. So for Mr. Run and Jump, that was the trio that generated the music, did sound effects. And man, when we first started working with them, they were mostly focused on St. Louis, but they've since, gotten much, I wouldn't say bigger because it's still, just a few guys, but they work on some big properties, but they still work on a lot of indie titles. So the team at Fat Bard, check them out. They make good tunes.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Bree, did you get any time with the game? I don't know if you were able to get it or not.
I was not able to get a copy of it, but I did get to check out some footage and just, I am familiar with Combinera, and that was actually one of the first things I noticed visually, was kind of the similarity there. And I actually love the color palette and the throwback to that arcade vibe. But I would say, from what I was able to see, I really enjoyed just the amount of movement in the modern version that was going on around in the background. It just gave a lot of really fun visual interest and that sort of stuff. Like, it just seems like it would be a fun thing to die and run and jump and die through over and over and over again. So, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. The same artist that led Combinera was the lead artist on Mr. Run and Jump.
Nice.
So yeah, Phil Snowbarger is who did those two titles on the art side. And a bit of trivia, the 2600 limited edition cartridge that'll be going on pre-order later, Phil did the box art for that. Years, ooh. I mean, goodness, John, what, 2.5, 3 years ago? Like, long time ago when John was still putting that whole concept together, Phil put that box art together. So there's a lot of, like, cool connections and trivia and all that kind of stuff that goes into, you know, how all these titles came together.
Very cool. I'm curious to see more about those throwback Atari carts that are coming out. Like, those just sound so cool. I wish I had the shelf space to, oh man, what could I sell?
Right. You know, so my first console that I ever touched was a 5200. So I never, I remember playing Pac-Man on the 5200, and I own two 2600s. Neither of them work. I have to get them fixed, but that, I feel like the way I always explain it is, like, that was really kind of the birth of our industry. Like, I get that there were some things that happened before to get things going, but so many game developers, at least of my age, you know, I'm about in my 40s, right? So,
I'm with you. So.
the birth of video games for us started with Atari. And so for us to say, oh, we've got this, you know, this Atari game, or like, so many people making games owe, I think, their start to, like, what Atari generated those many years ago. So for us to be, you know, having this cartridge out, like, it's super humbling, and in a way, kind of like, I have some, like, I'm not worthy type of feelings. but man, it's really cool to see. And, you know, I'm gonna have to go find a working 2600 finally, and make sure I can, you know, polish that thing up and prop it up, and definitely, you know, celebrate the extension and the continuation of that legacy. Yeah.
That's such a familiar sentiment that we hear from a lot of people on this show, whether it's getting a physical release or being on a Nintendo eShop or being on an Xbox store or being on a PlayStation store. Just growing up as a gaming fan and being like, oh, I loved PlayStation growing up, and now I have a game on the PS5. People go nuts about that, and it is such a cool feeling to just hear how excited people get about, like, we're here. We did what we wanted to do, and we fucking made it.
Yeah. It's, you know, my first game, this is funny, too. The first game that I ever made at one time was the worst rated PC game, like, of all time. Like, it was just, it was at the bottom of the barrel, below the dumpster, underneath all the sludge, and, like, there's this thing I made. And I still was smiling. What?
Is it Big Rigs?
Well, at one time, it was the lowest. That's why clarified. Now it's, like, in the bottom 30%.
No, you got to work harder.
I was just thrilled to see that thing in Target. And I was smiling so big, and, like, you know, here's this game that gets, like, a 2 out of 10 average or something review, and, like, just people hate the thing. But I was still happy making that first game. And then when we finally got our first Nintendo product, you know, seeing a game and popping it into my Game Boy, like, thrilled. Also, like, a 4 out of 10 game. People hated that one too, but they couldn't wipe the smile off my face because, you know, we were making progress on this dream that we had so long ago to make video games. You know, I didn't care what type of games we were making. I was busting my tail to try and make them the best I could be. To hell with budget or timeline. I mean, all those things were against us, but we always just try to do the absolute best we can. And here we are. Yeah. 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 It always feels with everything new that we touch.
You guys made it. So.
I don't know, man. At least one. I don't know. Probably more, but at least one gave up.
Maybe two. I can't count that high. I don't know.
Fair enough.
Oh, man. So what games are you playing these days? What are you enjoying when you're not working on Mr. Run and Jump?
Oof, John, you want to take that one first?
Yeah, sure. Sorry, I don't know what happened. Discord just, like, stopped working with my headphones. I don't know what happened, but yeah. And so I grabbed a pair. They're wireless, and they're telling me low battery. So We'll see. I'm sorry for these technical problems.
Not a problem at all.
Hack. Mr. Run and Jump is bug free. He put all of his technical solving into the game, so now his headphones don't work.
Good pitch. But no, there they go.
Here, I'll answer the question. John gets a moment to charge his, charge his headphones. So I'm playing Diablo 4, and I'm kind of grumpy about it.
Oh, why? Why are you playing grumpy?
Because it's taking up so much of my time.
Oh,
and okay. I played Diablo 3, and it's there's so much things that are the same, but now I'm into it like 25, 30 hours, and I'm starting to, like, addiction's finally coming in to where I'm, like, getting up early before, you know, work and stuff, and I'm like, I got to get in at least an hour. Like, this game's not going to beat itself. So, this is my love-hate relationship with Diablo.
My question with Diablo is, does it fucking end? I've been playing this game for days, weeks.
Oh, dude, and I've don't tell me that.
Quest
it better end.
Quest
I want it to be
quest. I just, I want a mount. And they're like, you got to be Acts 1, 2, and 3, and then you get a mount. And I'm like, but there's so many side quests. And
oh, I'm skipping all that. To heck with the other citizens of Sanctuary. I want to get through this. Come on.
Blue exclamation point, and I'm like, shit, I got to talk to them.
That's somebody else's job. I got I got the core quest to get through. Some other peasant can handle the orc that you're having a problem with, or collect your like lost journal.
Saving, but first, yeah. Let me check this graveyard out in the middle of
nowhere. Right? Yeah. Oh, you lost your journal? Let me go get that for you. Lilith is only rampaging your entire universe. Let me find your lost journal. Yeah. But no, it's fun. I've been complaining to the team because I really only can get into like one game a year. So I was saying, should it be Street Fighter 6? Strong candidate. Should it be Tears of the Kingdom? Also a strong candidate. And Diablo, which is the one that I was leaning towards the least, and wouldn't you know it, I got sucked into Sanctuary after all. Yeah. So
very, very.
What do you? Yeah. So, but yeah. Well, hopefully, John's headphones will come back. I would try and take a guess at what John's playing, but he is into John. John's got some obscure tastes, so he might have some real, wizard answer that I don't know. But yeah.
What's the most offbeat thing you're playing right now? The weirdest, out of nowhere.
So I bought a NES copy of Bart versus the Space Mutants that I've never beaten.
Interesting.
Which all of us would know that one probably, but you know, when we talk about how old the industry is now, younger kids coming up aren't playing that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, Bart versus Space Mutants on the NES.
We need a collection of all those old Simpsons games. Get the arcade game on there. Get the NES games on there, like Bart's Nightmare.
I would play the heck out of that.
It was a virtual Bart, stuff like that.
Probably, yeah. I never played the Nightmare one, but there's something about these NES games. It certainly was my childhood, more so than even the Atari. Atari might have been the first thing that I played, but Nintendo was the first one that I owned. And so a lot of my gaming preference and nostalgia is framed around that original NES. Yeah.
John, things are working on your
back.
End.
I'm back to speakers, so I hope, is the echo okay?
I haven't heard one yet, so hopefully it's okay.
Okay. Sometimes it seems like that comes and goes. I got them turned down real low, so we'll see how it goes.
What are you playing these days? What are you enjoying?
You know what? I hopped on the Pikmin 4 bandwagon last Friday, so I've been playing that is kind of my main squeeze these days, but
very nice.
But before that, I think the last thing I finished, I've been working my way through the Stalker games. So I finished maybe it was last Sunday. I finished Call of Pripyat.
Nice.
And that's a good one, man. I'll tell you. Yeah, I don't know. I guess Aki, you must be familiar with the Stalker games, but
yep.
I guess for the folks at home, it's Ukrainian studio, is it GSC Gameworks, developed this the series of games. There's three games in this Stalker franchise, but they're based off this old, or you know, from like the 70s, this Russian sci-fi novel called Roadside Picnic. Which the novel is about like a zone of kind of alien contamination where aliens came and then they got out of there and they left a whole bunch of strange artifacts and kind of like dangerous kind of, you know, anomalies that kind of have infected the land. And so kind of the government, you know, restricts access to the zone, but there are the stalkers who can, you know, get past kind of the government lines and smuggle artifacts out of the zone. And so, yeah, it's kind of this, you know, the game is actually about Chernobyl and like the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. So that like that is their zone, you know. So it's like based on this novel, but it's not like
very loosely.
It's like in, sorry, go ahead.
It's very loosely based on it. They deal with some of the same weird stuff that can happen in it. Like things mutate, and sometimes gravity is weird. Sometimes, you know, there's stuff. If you walk into an area, suddenly you just die.
Yeah, definitely.
That's always helpful.
It's a hard game.
Yeah, it's kind of one of these like really intense like first-person shooters with like a really accurate like ballistics model and then like as was described, it's like you know, there are, you know, mutants and there are all kinds of like anomalies and things that you'll kind of walk into like invisible pockets of, you know, just death nonsense and so in the game you kind of get this interesting mechanic where you can like put your gun away and you take out, you have like bolts, like nuts and bolts, and just kind of like, you know, loose detritus that you kind of can like fling in front of you in order to try and like see if there's something invisible in front of you, so you don't just walk into like a pocket of nonsense. But it's a really interesting game, you know, largely because, like, you know, I think since it has this connection to kind of this old novel, and then seeing, yeah, like what they were able to take out of that and how they were able to translate it to a video game. And there's also a movie based on the novel as well. That one's also called Stalker. But so it's kind of an interesting experience to kind of go through all three of these things and just kind of see how this like same core idea can be, like, it just like how the strengths of these different genres can like pull different pieces out of the source material and create three very distinct experiences, but that all have the same themes and the same core. So it's really, really neat.
I just can't wait for the for number two to come out on Xbox, because that's just going to make so many people cry, because I'm so sure so many people are going to buy that and be like, oh, it's like Metro. And then they're going to play it and they're just going to cry. I can't wait.
Yeah. I kind of have like
the misery of others.
Yes, I do. It's called Schrodinger. It's fantastic.
I have a suspicion that Stalker 2, because there's three Stalker games, but this fourth one is officially Stalker 2. But I have a feeling like we'll hit kind of like a Monster Hunter World effect, where it's like, okay, here's like this series, and it's like, you know, only nut jobs play this game. Like, it's hard, it's weird, it's janky, or it's, you know, this, you know, it's this whole thing. Whatever, there's some barrier to entry that is keeping just like mass, you know, amounts of people from jumping onto the series. But it's something that it's like talked about in hushed tones, you know. It's something that has kind of a mythos around it of like, ooh, like, you know, people have heard of Stalker, right? Like, you know, and so, yeah, like, and then a new one comes out, and for whatever reason, it's seen as like this, you know, nice jumping on point, and this huge waves of people jump onto it. So that's kind of my prediction for Stalker 2, is like, you know, we'll see kind of that effect happen.
I hope so. I just want to see the misery spread. Because those games are so damn hard. I just, oh, the delicious, delicious misery.
I've never heard her this happy. She's so happy about misery and tears. Oh my God.
Yes, it's fantastic.
Oh my God. Well, I know, John, Matt, we've been chatting for a while. Is there anything you wanted to chat about the game that we didn't bring up yet?
What do you think, John?
Well, you know, my speakers weren't working for half the episode, so I don't know. Maybe
no, let's everything. Just start over. What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast.
Let's see. Yeah, I I don't know. I mean, there's loads of things we could talk about, but you know, broadly, I think we hit a lot of the main things, I think.
I could introduce a point. One thing that does help, when you asked earlier about how you launch games, it really does help when players pop in and leave reviews for the game. So if you're playing the game and joining it on a platform, throw it some, you know, throw us your thoughts in like a Steam review, what have you. It really does help us kind of understand where the player base is and how to kind of do things better. It is something that's changed from that earlier story I told of, you know, if a game came out and, you know, hit retail, it was very hard to change. But now it's such an organic thing where, you know, we want to grow the audience and keep supporting Mr. Run and Jump. So thanks to all the fans playing it and sharing it and spreading the word, it definitely does help. So active communities, good players that support the type of title that we built is it just makes the whole thing worthwhile. So thanks for all the support.
Now, what is next for Mr. Run and Jump? Are we going to see a sequel, or are you guys going to be moving on to a different project?
You know, I think, you know, right now, like with any game, again, you're keeping the momentum going. So John and I are going to continue to stream and support the game every Friday, and continuing to kind of to build it up, cheer on the physical release of the 2600 version, and just kind of support the one that we've got out there and make sure the fans are seeing it and hearing about it. But we have tons of ideas on how we could expand the world and lots of motivation to, you know, to kind of keep this game that fans really seem to love growing. So it'd be super fun to keep working on you know, bigger and more realms and more colors and more running and more jumping.
More music.
Yeah,
absolutely. Oh,
since you're OCR fans, you should try organizing like an OCR project to cover the Mr. Run and Jump soundtrack.
Would be great. You know, that is something that of the original games that we've made, I've not seen. I listen to the OCR Rainwave all the time, and I'm just waiting for something that we've made to show up, and it hasn't happened yet. But that'll be a definitely another moment where I'm like, you know, kind of shell shocked at how cool, you know, this career and how cool this industry can be.
I'll have to see if I could get my buddy Grant to do a Run and Jump remix or cover.
Would be amazing.
Something.
Yeah, would be amazing.
Where can people keep up to date with you guys and what you're doing?
Just about every social network. You can find us at Mr. Run and Jump. If you want to see some hilarity, you can go to I'm Mr. Run and Jump on TikTok. That's where me and John get to goof around and do wild things with Mr. Run and Jump themselves. And yeah, you can find Graphite Lab, same place, at Graphite Lab on Twitter and on Facebook and on Instagram. And you can find us on Steam, follow Graphite Lab, keep up with what we're making. And from that, you can find me and John too. If you want to follow us and hear us talk about game dev and new projects, you can find our handles there too.
Very cool. John, Matt, thank you so much for coming on, hanging out with us. We'll have to get you back on again sometime. It's been a really fun chat. The unfortunate thing is we have a lot more show to take care of, so we are going to have to move on. It has been an absolute pleasure having you two on. Tell us one more time about the game, where it's available, how much is it, what do people have to do to interact with Mr. Run and Jump?
So Mr. Run and Jump is $24.99. You can get it on PlayStation, on Switch, on Xbox, on PC, on Epic Game Store, and the VCS. The Special Edition 2600 version will come out for pre-order end of this month. And you can find exact pricing and region availability on Atari's website. And check it out, and you will love this precision platformer. And we hope that you share it with your friends.
Yeah, what do you have to do to play it? You got to be a cool person. First
thing. Sorry, Jacob, you're out.
Yeah, no.
You're going to have to delete it from your system.
Sorry, them's the brakes. I don't know what to tell you.
Wouldn't be the first time.
No, it's not. It's not. But again, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out with us. The episode will be up later on this week, over the weekend. I'll be sure to let you know when it goes up. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
Thanks for the support, guys. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much. This is a lot of fun.
Cool. Have a good one, guys.
See you guys. Bye.
Bye.
All right. More show. We got a lot more show. Excited?
No.
Yay.
Yeah, it's fun.
That's about the level of
excitement. I feel like it's my job to be the excited one and keep it positive.
That's the level of excitement most people have for the August Xbox Games with Gold lineup. It's like they're ending Games with Gold, and this is how they're going out.
I don't know. They're games I didn't own that I was interested in, so I'm pleased enough.
All right, well,
I own one of them.
I own them both.
I had to review the Drift game. Mm.
I probably own neither of them, so yay!
Yay!
The games with Gold for August are Blue Fire and Inertial Drift.
Yep,
nope. Inertial Drift is good. It's weird, but once you get the hang of the controls, it's pretty cool.
Hey, Brooke.
What?
Brooke's in chat.
Oh, okay.
I'm waiting for her to just join in the show.
I felt violated there for a minute. As Aki's like, "Hey, Brooke."
Can I flirt with Brooke too?
Yes.
Yes, go right ahead.
Hey, Brooke.
Hey, Aki.
Don't.
Hey, Coltrane.
Hey, Joe.
Shut up.
Hey, Bree.
Yo.
Well, I'm seduced.
On the flip side, PlayStation Plus lineup for August is markedly better than what Xbox has to offer, and the comments on the PlayStation blog are just people bitching. They are getting PGA 2K23, which, okay, it's a golf game. Not everyone's going to like it, but I'd be excited for that one. Dreams for the PS4, which a lot of people are upset because Media Molecule has stated they're done working on the game.
That just means they have a finished game.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. And then Death's Door.
Is that the one where you play as the bird, Death?
Yes.
That looked good. They have a good lineup.
Yeah, they have a pretty good lineup.
I'm jealous.
And then Nintendo Switch is adding a couple of games to the Game Boy collection with Legend of Zelda Oracle of Ages and Legend of Zelda Oracle of Seasons.
Okay, nice.
More PlayStation news. The PS5 is now up to 40 million consoles sold. 29 million are in the homes of scalpers.
That makes me... All the scalpers bought all of them and they can't sell them.
Nah, there's a lot of systems out there. So it's good to see they're more available now. I've seen them in stores recently. I've seen Xboxes in stores recently. So hopefully the drought is over.
I hope the fuck so.
Something that is not over is Tencent's worldwide expansion, as they have purchased a majority stake in Techland, the developers of the Dying Light franchise.
Yeah,
good shit.
Techland
is getting worryingly big with how many groups they're buying and investing in. I think it was Thimber was saying that they're not allowed to outright purchase companies from China's government, but they're just buying majority stakes and somehow that's allowed.
Yeah. And everyone's worried about Microsoft being a monopoly.
Yeah, no shit.
Tencent has so much more that... Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure Tencent has more than both Sony's PlayStation and Microsoft's Xbox combined. It is insane.
I don't know. Tencent is playing Monopoly and winning.
Yes, Tencent very much is. Embracer is very much...
I was going to say Embracer Group is the other one that's pretty majority.
Yeah, the two of them own more than everyone else can buy easily. And at some point, it's not going to be a console war anymore. It's just going to be, do you play Embracer games or Tencent games? And that's really all there's going to be.
Oh, that and kids games.
Okay.
Yeah. Which means kids games were announced today. DreamWorks All-Star Kart Racing was announced from Game Mill. Gonna have 20 racers, including Shrek, Po from Kung Fu Panda, the Boss Baby, each getting their own customizable carts. And then Game Mill also announced Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl 2 for release later this year.
Were they the ones that got rid of their first game, took it off? Was that one of the brawling games went kaput? Was that?
No, that's Multiverses.
Okay.
Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl is still out. This one, they're going to have voice acting it from the beginning, thankfully.
Ooh,
very nice.
Yeah, some bad news. CD Projekt Red announced that they're going to be laying off around 100 employees.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's about 9% of its workforce. So
I thought it was more than that. Okay. Nope. Well, that still sucks.
Yeah. And that's not all the bad news. I got one more thing to talk about. Sources are coming out saying that Ubisoft has reportedly canceled its in-development sequel to Immortals Fenyx Rising.
Yeah,
that bums me out. I really liked that game.
So Ubisoft finally does something unique and different. They cancel the sequel. Fuckers.
Of course.
I still haven't played it. It's on my list.
Oh, so it's your fault. It's so good.
It's totally my fault. God damn it, I have closed down entire restaurants because I didn't go there that one Thursday, and then they shut down their doors. They just couldn't stay open without me. It's all my fault.
Here's how good that game is. I've played through the main campaign 3 times just because I could.
Wow.
Okay.
But we already know you don't have a life.
Yes, I may not have a life, but I never replay games.
That is true.
Because I usually get all the achievements in my first run. If I have to, I'll play a second one to get any of the leftovers, and then I'm done.
Yeah,
I don't replay it more than that. I got all the achievements in my first fucking run, and I still played it 2 more times.
Love it.
Yeah.
Anyway, what news do y'alls have?
I actually have none, because I took my news.
Which one was your news?
The Nickelodeon All-Stars Brawl.
Aki, any news on your end?
No, sadly.
Shocker.
Yeah. I know, it's crazy. I don't have news. It's fucking nuts.
Wonderful. Bree, any news on your end?
Sadly, I think you hit all the things that I might have had.
Cool. We're done with news.
So helpful.
Is this the part where we...
Wait, there's news in chat about UB Plus. There's a dollar deal.
Now, they're doing $1 for the first month of Ubisoft Plus, I don't know. Maybe I'll do a month, but I'm certainly not doing a full-priced month.
How much is a full-priced month?
Like $16.99 or $17.99. And it's only Ubisoft games.
I mean, that might be... No, not really. It still wouldn't be particularly worth it even... For like, if you needed the new Assassin's Creed game, you're like, I'm going to play this. It's still not really worth it because if you play an Assassin's Creed game and you are like, I'm just going to play through it, no life it, and just get through it, get the 100%. It's still going to take you about 200 plus hours, so it's still going to take you over a month. I know I've done it a couple times. It's like still not worth it because then you have to spend 2 months paying for it. And that's more than half the cost of the game. So just get the game.
Anyway, should we get to reviews since we're talking about games?
Sure. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Bree, you want to go first or do you want
to
have someone else go first?
I would love to. I need to turn my AC back on and
well, why don't you turn on the AC so we could finally hear how loud it is?
You really want me to turn this on?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. All right, hold on. I'll be right back.
Why are we so damn invested in hello?
Because nothing ever fucking happens on this thing. Nothing ever happens on this podcast, so this is what we're entertained by.
Yeah, true. I'm waiting for like a lawnmower to start.
It's 10 o'clock at night. I mean,
I don't think it's lawnmower bad, but like it's pretty loud to me.
Yeah, I can't hear anything.
Yeah, I don't hear anything.
Nothing.
All right. Well.
So you were in misery for nothing.
You've been suffering for the last hour.
No, it's been on all day. So, like, I had the door closed, this room. Like, it's just now starting to get, like, really hot where I'm like, okay, you know, it's been an hour. I need to turn it back on.
My air conditioner has been set to 70 degrees the entire day.
70? Mine's in, like, 63.
Yeah, I'm already spending over $100 for this. I can't spend too much more. I don't have that kind of money. Because
otherwise Aki will have to cancel some of her Gunpla pre-orders.
Yes, I actually legitimately would, and that's not fucking happening. Because if I brought it down to like 65, it would probably cost me about $100 fucking more. And it's Lord.
Then she'd only be able to get 8 burgers from Rally's or wherever the fuck.
Hey, that's multiple days worth of food. Fuck off.
All right, so let's get to reviews. First game to talk about tonight is The Wandering Village, developed and published by Strafon Studio. Released July 20th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $24.99. In a world where mysterious plants are spreading all over the earth, emitting toxic spores as they grow, a small group of survivors seek shelter on the back of a giant wandering creature they call Anbu. Become their leader, build their settlement, and form a symbiotic relationship with the creature to survive in this hostile yet beautiful post-apocalyptic world that now surrounds you. Bree, tell us about your time with The Wandering Village.
So, first of all, I want to say what drew me to this game was the total, like, Ghibli vibe. Like, it reminded me the art style, the character models in the beginning, even some of the music and everything of Nausicaä, which is my favorite. It's like a good childhood memory for me and everything like that. The second thing that really drew me to this game was the simulation village management kind of held like this really similar vibe to me to the Kingdom series, which I'm really, really fond of. And I think it was Thimber was playing earlier. I was just noticing in the chat, like there's these events that come through that will just like totally wreck everything. I'll get to that in a minute, but it really reminded me of like this whole like Blood Moon thing, and it's just. So go ahead.
Can I interrupt for a second? You said the Kingdom series.
Yeah, what's Kingdom that? Two Crowns, Kingdom.
Okay.
They have a new one that just came out on Steam as well. That's the 80s. I can't wait to get my hands on that one. But in the meantime, I have this game which fills that void for me until the new Kingdom comes. Right. And the other thing to mention too, there's a price listed so you can support development. This is in game preview still. But it is available on Game Pass now, and there's a free trial. So if, you know, this is something you even think, you know, you might be interested in checking out, like please do. And if you do decide to get the game for yourself, like you're just gonna be helping support Strafon Studio, which is a Swiss studio also. I'm pretty happy. Yay, Switzerland. The story of the game is you are a nomadic people. You're wandering through these really toxic lands looking for a home, and then you find this giant ancient beast, an Anbu, and you create a symbiotic relationship to house your village on its back. To repay your host for the safety and resources, you get to you feed and care for this, and you can pet him. Pet him. I know, right? It's exciting. So let's talk about Anbu first. He's like a giant puppy made of living earth, I guess. You can feed him, you can pet him. You have a trust system that you can earn. You have the opportunity to drill into his back and mine certain resources and lose trust with him, or you can, you know, take a completely different route. You can just be totally neutral and just, you know, farm the resources off the back and like do what you need to do to keep him going. But the ultimate goal here, you kind of have to pay attention to three different levels of this game. You have to pay attention to your villagers, you need to pay attention to your host, Anbu, and you need to pay attention to the bigger world outside. And Anbu just kind of keeps moving until you build a relationship, get those resources going so that you can help control Anbu a little bit. You can do that in nice ways, you can do that in mean ways. You have a lot of options with this game. So, you know, dealing with Ambu, there's entire tracks that your villagers can learn to farm food, make medicine to keep them happy and healthy. On his back, like, everything in this game is procedurally generated. You know, like, you're going to get a different run every time. So if you start a new game, you're going to get resources sort of randomly thrown out on Anbu's back. You're going to get a random-ish starting point for the game, and events will come. There's some rhythm to that that you'll notice after you've done a few runs in the beginning, where you're going to find that, like, around day 50, certain types of things happen, or around day 100, certain types of things happen. But for the most part, all the little stuff in between is kind of randomized, and you're really just reacting to the environment as you encounter it. As for, like, the village, I would recommend, just based on the playthrough I've done so far, or the multiple playthroughs at this point, I recommend a balanced approach to things, but there's so many options with all the randomization. You can really go for, like, hardcore village simulation and pay very little attention to your Anbu and, like, focus on one thing versus another. But I really say, like, the key to survival long term is like a good balance between all the things. You're gonna run into these different village events, very like PvE. We were talking about the poison clouds. So, like, this is kind of the big overplot of the world, is there's these poison spores that have taken over the world, and they will come through in these clouds, or you'll walk through these heavily poisonous areas, because Anbu's just a puppy, right? Like, Anbu has this, you have to learn to guide Anbu to really have control of your environment. And you know, Anbu's not so smart. He loves to eat mushrooms, but there are these rocks that look like his favorite mushrooms, and he'll totally eat them and get constipated. You know, so there's lots of different things going on there that you have some control over and you don't have control over. Those poison cloud attacks will make these spores appear on your village. They'll take over your existing berry plants, your trees, and things that you need for resources. Thankfully, you know, once you learn the skills and get you know, a good balance, you can really you can manage those events really well. You can repopulate your farms and things like that. Like, the resources on Anbu's back are, they're not finite, but they do regenerate, you know, at a certain rate. So you've got a lot of resources. It's very good to take care of your Anbu. And you have to keep your people happy. That's another thing that I'm sort of working on right now, and like the minutia of the game mechanics. They need things beyond just food and shelter. Sometimes they want things like decorations to give them this like feeling of home or entertainment or something like that. But for the most part, your little people just like run around and do their jobs. But it's real easy for things to kind of domino, and famine will strike because you aren't paying attention to the world events, or you're not paying attention to Anbu, or you miss that there was a poison spore, you know, little cluster over here that took out some of your crops, and then like suddenly everybody's dead. And if you lose your villagers or your Anbu dies, like, that's it, game over. The other thing I would say, though, is that the game is really generous with auto saves and manual saves. Like, it was almost like I was starting to feel like, oh, if I start taking notes about my saves, and you can name them as well, it was like going back through Skyrim and like, oh man, if I just go back like 14 hours ago, I could get this one thing and branch off over, you know, that was when things went wrong. Let me just back that up to like yesterday, and we'll go from there and see not only if like I get some different random events better, but like, you know, maybe I just didn't want to go down that path with that skill set right away. Maybe I want to work on this other thing first. And so I'm like rambling about all these things. I want to say this game is very detailed, and it's still in game preview, right? So it does require you to have these sorts of balance and pay attention to all these things. You get to walk through different biomes with different weather and climate, which have effects on your crops, your people, the resources you can scavenge. You know, all the procedural generation. There's even challenge levels that you can add once you've gotten through like a playthrough. You have the opportunity to add extra challenge levels besides the main difficulty levels, where you can affect the weather starvation, different things. I did this one achievement that was like 100 days without harvesting any berries. it was rough, but there was like this extra modifier you could do that you start the game with no berries, and that made it a lot easier to get through. So it's called hostility level modifiers. The other awesome thing is you have this news feed ticker at the bottom left of your screen that tells you about all sorts of important events. Like if you have a scavenging crew go out, you'll come back with different resources. You also get to find out everything about Anbu and if he's happy and wagging his tail, or if he's, you know, unhappy and doesn't trust you, or if he's pooping. And pooping is important for Anbu. It's part of his metabolism. It's also good for you because you can harvest that poop once you learn the skills, and you can make biofuel to fuel your little flamethrowers that you then can use to clear out those poison gas clouds. Yeah, so Anbu has made a bowel movement, will pop across your screen fairly often. It'll tell you when he yawns and when he's sleepy, and there's a little window in the top right corner and you can see his happy little face. And when you feed him with a trebuchet. You grow mushrooms and make little mushroom balls, and you get to launch this food at him. And he grabs it like a little puppy, like he's grabbing the snack out of there. And then you get a doctor. You get specialized villagers that do doctoring for Anbu, and they have a little hot air balloon. And you learn to go out there. You pet Anbu that way. You help earn trust. You can go feed Anbu medicine and that sort of stuff. So there's just so much detail to this game, and I think that there's more to come. And music, that was another thing I wanted to talk about for sure. I loved the music in this, and there is a soundtrack available, I know, to purchase, at least on Steam, possibly some other places. I was trying to look to see. I know there's some places that have it up for you to listen to, but like it reminded me a lot of some old anime JRPG stuff, and at one point it turns from this like Ghibli wind farming fantasy music. I walked into the desert, and this Middle Eastern fantasy, very spirited music came up, and I was just like utterly entranced by this. So the soundtrack, I hope they're going to add more to it as well, like as they go on, but like I really, really have enjoyed the music so far. It's got a good variety as you're going through. It relates to the different biomes, which is helpful as an audio cue, because if you do, like you're just struggling to solve this famine problem and you're not paying attention, it's only going to get worse if you don't realize you just walked into the desert. What else did I want to say? On Xbox, I was actually really surprised. They have console keyboard and mouse support.
Cool.
I didn't do much with it, but I thought it was pretty cool. I was actually able to use my keyboard to get rid of the UI and just kind of move myself around, and it was just a really beautiful, you know, view of my village, and get some screenshots in there, some good stuff. You can zoom in really close too, which was great. You've got a lot of options as far as, I mean, for, you don't have like 360 views or anything, but you have a lot of zoom in. You can like watch your little people go. You've got different speeds. There's so much going on, and it's just, you know, it feels like a very finished game that's still in a game preview. And yeah, and
where
it's
do
got
you
achievements
see it going
with it.
From here?
Like, so I feel like there is a little bit of tweaking that could definitely happen with the AI. I did have some villager AI issues. Sometimes they just felt like they didn't want to go where I wanted them to go, and I had to get myself into certain habits to really make them go where I wanted them to go by, like, attrition. You know, it's like, okay, well, I'm just going to close down every building but the one building I need them to go to, or we're all starving and dying, like, right now. Like, please go to the... Oh, my gosh, no. No, no, no. Go to the other building. Oh. So there was a couple little issues with some of those things. I will say I'm really, really pleased with... They have what looks like a clear development roadmap. They have a website. You can actually get to it from the dashboard of the game, or the main splash page of the game. They really seem to be encouraging people to join the Discord. They want to hear what you have to say. On their roadmap, you know, just coming up, things they already have planned, they're going to give you skins for your Anbu, so you can customize. I got to actually look through the website and see some of the original art styles and different drawings that they had for different Anbu. You're going to be able to name your Anbu, because Anbu is a type of creature, not the name of your host. There's actually a point around day 100 that you'll always run into an Anbu that's fallen to the poisonous spores, maybe because they didn't have villagers like you that cared and created the symbiotic relationship. They're going to have some new biomes coming. I think they also mentioned that they're already, you know, planning on working on some of the AI and the user interface sort of stuff. But they also talked about more events, and I think I forgot to mention that in there. You really do have some cool like PvE event stuff when you go out scavenging or you just run into villagers on the road. There's so much good stuff going on. It's easy to kind of get stuck in one thing, but and I say that there's so much going on. I don't feel that that's overwhelming either. You have so many options to enjoy this world and just dive into it. And you can also give yourself a short experience and you can do a good run through of a reasonable amount of stuff towards, say, like an achievement in about 3 hours. So there's a lot of variety to your play there.
Nice. Well, for now, it is clocking in at $24.99 in game preview. Obviously, because it's game preview, it may go up in price later on. But right now, it's $24.99. Is this something people should be jumping on now or holding off on? Wish list? What do you think?
Please support these devs. If that means giving them $25, if this is the sort of game you want to see grow and you want to see more things like this, especially on console, that they're able to get this amount of detail and these things, you know, being able to play this on an Xbox, like, as opposed to having to play on PC, it was so fluid and so wonderful. And I don't sleep on this. Give it a try at least on Game Pass or a free trial, whatever platform you're on that's available. Go check out that free trial. And if you like, you know, the simulation management type games, it's really beautiful. And if you can, yeah, please support the devs.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. That is it for you, Bree. We will let you get going. I know you got your own stream to take care of.
I do.
What's on the docket for tonight?
Well, I was going to play with the regular group, but I think instead I'm going to catch up with my bestie and we are going to shoot some pew-pews in Far Cry 5. So, Yeah, we're going to go take out some cultists.
Cool. Well, we will let you get going. Do you have any final words?
My brain has melted.
That was a good Mitch McConnell impression.
Wow. All right. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for letting me ramble on your show again, and I will talk to you all soon.
Cool. We'll see you again soon.
Bye-bye. All right.
See you, Bree.
I can Mitch McConnell. What the fuck is wrong? Well, I know that he's, like, old and evil, but, like, what the hell?
You didn't hear about Glitch McConnell?
Yeah, that's what I'm laughing about. The reference.
Yeah.
That's why I'm giggling at the reference so much. He went full blue screen mode. Oh my god. Anyway, next game to talk about is Ant Stream Arcade, developed and published by Ant Stream, released July 21st on Xbox One and Series X and S for $29.99 for 1 year access, or $79.99 for lifetime access. Your ultimate gaming arcade is here with over 1,300 classic games from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. Get a full year's access to the world's largest official retro gaming catalog of games. Ant Stream Arcade gives you unrestricted access to some of the best games ever made, and new games are added every month. Feel the nostalgia by playing games from your childhood or discover new games you never knew existed. Jacob, tell us about your time with Ant Stream Arcade.
So Ant Stream Arcade is a cloud-based game service that you can subscribe to that has arcade, has retro games. Pretty much old arcade games, NES, some Atari stuff, like Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, that level of stuff. And I know that there are like a few PlayStation titles on there, but not many. But like that gives you like a good
idea. We'll get to that.
Yeah. That gives you like a good idea of like what range we're talking about. And pretty much with it is as far as I could tell, like every genre is represented. You want platformers? Cool, we got platformers. You want fighting games, like puzzle games, driving games? Heck, they've even got point and click adventure games on their like old LucasArts titles. And it's just like there is a lot of content, and I'm not gonna lie, it's a tad overwhelming at first, and it doesn't help that the user interface is not great with it, or the GUI I should say is not great with it. It's a little hard to find. I mean, yeah, of course you can just type in what you're looking for, but the thing is that it's just, there's no real, at least on through the Xbox version, no real just like straight up list of like, here's everything. But yeah, it's just like, there's like a surprising amount of stuff on here. Like, there's a ton of games out of the SNK library. They have an area that's just devoted to LucasArts games. So if you want to play like the old retro Star Wars games, like they're there. I wish the arcade games were there, but it's like Super Star Wars and Super Empire Strikes Back, stuff like that. But like you can also play like a bunch of the Indiana Jones games. Like as I said, there's some of the point and click adventures. It's just like it's all over the place, and like there are plenty of games for you to try. Like. I found it to be kind of interesting, like how some of the arcade games were just like, you know, it's just a straight port. But then like my kid and I were playing Rampage today and it just kept going. Like, all right, you just hit B to like revive your character and then just keep going. Like it doesn't take away your score. It doesn't do anything. I thought that was a little mystifying, but whatever.
Well, it's my arcade kid, Rampage, you just pop another quarter in.
Yeah, and your score keeps going, though?
Well, if you're putting quarters in, sometimes, yeah. Depends on the game.
It's weird. I only actually played Rampage earlier this year, which I know is somewhat mind-blowing, but... wow. What? But, like the Ninja Gaiden series is there. Like, I mean, it's like... And Mortal Kombat, that's there, too. Like, there is a ton of stuff. Everyone is going to find... something to play with Ant Stream Arcade, which is something I really appreciated. But honestly, it's just, as I said, like that user interface, like it makes, like it's clunky, it's hard to navigate everything, and I don't think it particularly shows off stuff well. I still don't quite understand the challenges. Like, I get that there's like little contests that run like almost like every 10 minutes. But like, and I understand that there's challenges that like, you know, hey, let's see if you could score 100,000 points on this thing. But like, are there supposed to be challenges that you can send to your friends?
Yes.
I still can't figure out how the heck to do that.
Start a challenge. Okay. Literally pick any game that has challenges. Go
right
up to the challenge tab. Are you in the game now?
No.
Oh, go to the challenge tab. Go down to pick any challenge that's available. There's some games have one challenge. Some have multiple challenges that span from super easy to super difficult. Usually the easy one is unlocked, and then you have to pay your crystals that you earn to unlock harder challenges. And then when you pick a challenge, it says solo, duel, or party. And
okay,
you get to pick to either do it by yourself, which is solo, or you can bid 10 gems and challenge someone else.
Okay.
And then once you're done, it sends the challenge off to whoever you challenged. And then they play, and whoever wins gets the gems. Whoever loses is a loser.
Well.
You.
You know. Right.
You.
Yeah, I'm aware.
You suck.
So, anyway...
Yeah, challenges are awesome. I've been challenging No-Pulse constantly. We've been going back and forth, trading victories and stuff like that. My main issue with the game, honestly, comes down, like you mentioned, it's the UI. It's all cloud-based. Nothing is downloaded, really. Like, I wish it had, like, a bigger cache so that it could store all the game icons, so that it could store all the game titles. Like, I know it can't store the actual games themselves, probably because of legal reasons and also because of storage reasons. This is cloud gaming, not just, you know, a constant arcade. But I wish it was snappier so that when you go and there's like, hey, check out this list of games that have challenges, you hit the button and you don't have to wait for 30 art icons to download.
Yeah, on top of it, like, initially we were trying to figure out, like, which version of the game I got, whether it was the one-year subscription or the lifetime subscription, like, and Joe was trying to walk me through, like, how to figure this out within AntStream Arcade. And the thing is, where the space where it tells you how long you have left on your subscription, it actually still is spinning for me every single time I go to access it. I know that it's a one-year subscription, but, like, I actually can't view that from within the AntStream Arcade thing. And
yeah, I've gone to the little cart icon to load and see, like, what you can do with the crystals, and it's, I don't know if it's just not implemented yet, if they're still working on it. I see some people wondering if they think they can handle streaming. I have had zero latency issues. I've had zero glitching. If I didn't know this was cloud gaming, I wouldn't know. Because yeah, it feels like it's native gameplay. I haven't had any issues, any stuttering, any lag. It has been a really, really smooth experience. I love the wide variety of games. I don't like that it's so hard to find what you want to play. Like you said, I wish there was just list view or platform view. Speaking of platform, go ahead.
I also wish, like, as a parent, like, I wish that there was, like, a way to, like, separate it so my kids could hop into it and not see, like, that Mortal Kombat is available.
Well, here's the good news for your kids. It's a T-rated game, so you're not getting fatalities in Mortal Kombat.
I still don't want them playing fighting
games. There's no blood in Mortal Kombat.
I don't give a crap. I don't want them playing fighting games. Like, it's just, you know, like, if I could limit it to, like, Rampage or, like, a bunch of the arcade driving games or some of the puzzle games, like, stuff like that.
Set up a favorites and let them play from your favorite selection.
I suppose. But then it would also be nice if there was, like, multiple lists that you could curate or something like that.
I think multiple lists that you can manage might be asking much. I think having a favorite list is good enough. I think them having the Netflix style headers is helpful, but it's still not as good as having a full on, let me browse everything. Something else I'm not a fan of, speaking of platforms, is they make a lot of hype out of playing PS1 games. There's two loaded, I think 40 winks. That's it. Those are the PS1 games. So people who are expecting to play, like, Jumping Flash or Spyro or Crash or, yeah, I know we're not going to see stuff like Legend of Dragoon on here, Aki, but it just the selection of the platforms that they're hyping up is very lacking right now. Sure, there's 1,300 games. There's actually 1,440-something if the in-game counter is right, but there's a lot of filler. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't hold up well. There's a lot of, like, Amiga games or Commodore games that just don't translate well to a gamepad. It's a great start for $30 for a year access. I'm on board. I think it's awesome. I think there are a lot of problems with it, but what's there is worth the asking price. You're going to have to deal with a lot of headaches, a lot of UI issues, a lot of finding issues, but the actual content, once you get to it and once you get into the challenges, it's some of these games are still really good games, and there's a lot of great stuff to play there. You know, you're not going to fire up the PS1 game loaded and be like, holy shit, this is the greatest thing I ever played, especially because there's a lot of violence toned down in that game. But, you know, it's a mixed bag. As much as I want to give this, like, hearty, oh my God, you need to buy this. First off, you can't because it's subscription. Second, there's just too many issues to really be that wholehearted enthusiastic about it. I think it's worth getting for $30. I don't know if it's worth getting for $80 for a lifetime, but a year for $30, I think, is worth it.
Yeah, I can agree with that, because, I mean, how long has this thing been around, first off?
I don't know.
Okay. So I was going to say, I mean, like, if they've got like a PC, proven track record, then I mean, it might be worth the lifetime. Also, does the lifetime, does that carry over from Xbox to like PC?
Not
like,
that I could tell. I believe it's just for Xbox that you get the subscription.
That's a big ask.
Their online interface isn't the greatest. Like, I think I have two accounts on there because I also tried playing on PC. So there's two Jocam Nets. One is like level 11, the other's level 1. I'm the level 11 one, by the way.
Yeah, totally. I'm sure.
Shut the fuck up.
I was level 11, you guys.
Yeah, I like it. I wish I could be more enthusiastic about it. But until I see more and to see the direction that it goes, I can't suggest a lifetime membership, but $30 for a year, I'm down with that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it feels right. And like, in all reality, it's like a little over $3. Like, it's
Fimber saying that Antstream released on PC in June 2021. So it's been around for 2 years.
Okay. So I mean, if you could transfer like your lifetime subscription in between like platforms, I'd be more game to like
that might going be for something it. That they're working on.
Maybe.
I've extended an invite to them to come on the show. I would love to chat with them about this game. If they listen and they want to come on and chat with us and answer some of these questions, I would love to have them on. What's your verdict?
I'd go with a try it. I think that there's enough content in there for everyone to find this to be a worthwhile purchase. But just know that you may have a little bit of a hard time finding exactly all that what stuff. You want. Yeah.
I'm going with a buy it. I wish I could be more enthusiastic about it. There's a lot of problems, a lot of hiccups, but there's a lot of games to play. So, do you know if it's locked to the gamer tag or the Xbox? I believe it's to the gamer tag. But that's something I would love to ask and find out for sure. I wonder if I could log in as Ashley and thing. Although that probably wouldn't work because it's my home console. So I don't know.
You dumb bitch.
I know. Next game to talk about is Koa and the Five Pirates of Mara, developed by Chibig and Talpa Games, published by Chibig. Released July 27th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Join Koa and her best friends Napopo, and her best friend Napopo on an action-packed adventure through the islands of Mara, outwit traps, maneuver dangerous environments, and explore a series of dazzlingly different landscapes on their quest to recover stolen pirate loot. Aki, what is going on in Koa and the Five Pirates of Mara?
Okay. So this is another game in the Mara universe. Some of you might remember, though I doubt it, a game I reviewed a year or two ago now, I think, called Summer in Mara. And you play as Koa again in this game, just like you did back then. And basically, the island that you spend most of Summer in Mara on has had all of its shit stolen by pirates. Because they wanted to create the pirate trials, which they just made up because that's what they do. Because they're trying to find someone who's worthy to become a new pirate and join them. And so you're like, well, I want to get everyone's stuff back. So I guess I'm going to go through these trials and get their shit back because I'm like 8 and all of these adults are too stupid to do that. So that's what you do. And all of these trials are basically little timed races. I don't think you technically have to do particularly well in order to beat most of them, but they do have times that you can beat, and there are achievements for getting gold on one level and on all levels, which is not particularly easy. But you just run around, you collect little shells in order to buy stuff, as well as there's some other items that allow you to get upgrades to your ship or buy new outfits or new backpacks for Koa that you can collect in the different races and around the hub world, I guess we'll call it, because you still get to pilot your ship around to find the different islands where you do the races, but there's also occasionally some other things that you can do as well. Like there's something where once you get an upgrade, you're able to dive down and collect treasure, things like that. Otherwise, this is mostly just timed races. You're not usually racing against other people. It's just really against the clock. There are a few of them where you're racing one of the big pirates. Every little section has a big pirate race to collect a map piece. And then there's also some apprentice races from other people who are also trying to do these trials as well. This isn't a particularly long game, unless you're trying to get gold and everything, and then it is a bit of a longer game. I say you can probably beat this in 3 or 4 hours max if you're just trying to be like, I just want to get this done and get to the end, and I don't care about achievements. It's not very long. But yeah, there's not a lot to say about it.
Well, the main question is it fun? Is it good? It's a $20 game. Is it worth dropping the bucks on it? I believe it's actually on sale for the next few days for $16.99 on Xbox. What are your thoughts?
I really liked it. There are some that, if you're going for all the golds, are a fucking pain in the ass, like a massive one. They are so hard, so tight, but the game's fun otherwise. It's really enjoyable game. There are a few of them that are gonna make you want to throw your controller really badly.
So your verdict?
I am totally for this game. I really enjoy it. I like the entire universe.
Let's buy it.
Yeah, okay, for sure.
Cool. Next up, Venice 2089, developed by Safe Play Studio, published by Fantastico Studio, released July 19th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $6.99. In Venice 2089, you'll explore the city through the eyes of Nova, a bored teenager who has no clue about what to do in life and just wants to relax from the stress of their usual routine. Jacob, sounds like us.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, except I'm not a teenage girl. Are you?
I mean, you. That's debatable on whether you're a teenage girl or not.
Well, no.
It is.
No, I not have, really. I have
money that you are.
You have money that I'm a teenage. I'm 38. I can't be a teenager. Allegedly. Anyway.
So, how's Venice 2089?
So, Venice 2089 is this 2D. I don't know that I'd call it an adventure game, because it's really you're really just going around Venice, talking to people, collecting items, going on quests. Like a lot, there's a lot of fetch quests in this game, but there are some puzzles as well that go with it. And so, so the game is set in 2089. Surprisingly. And thanks to global warming, the sea or river, whatever, in Venice, has gone up, and it's caused everyone to have to like board up like the bottoms of their houses. And like what's left of the city is essentially just like the very top floors of most of the houses, in there. And so, it's a lot of exploration because you haven't been there since you were a little kid, because you're visiting your grandpa for the summer. Some of the people in the town haven't seen you since you were a kid. You just haven't been there since I think last summer, but because like there are other people your age that you know. So you're gonna meet like a weird cast of characters, including like a homeless old lady who doesn't mind being homeless, but she also wants you to find every single feather in the town. There's like a reporter that you could talk to. One of my favorite ones actually is this guy who opens up an ice cream shop, and you have to bring him different flavors because he just has all the standard stuff. Like he doesn't make anything wacky. And so to drum up customers, he's having you bring him like new inspirations. And so like one of them is like basil that like you picked like the leaves off of somebody's, out of somebody's garden. Another one is a square watermelon that you got out of a vending machine, stuff like that. And it's just a really chill game. Like you're just there on your hoverboard navigating the city. You know, it can be a little difficult navigating stuff because like, I mean, it's that 2.5D, type of graphics. And so sometimes like, it's not always the most responsive, like when you want to go down like a different alleyway than what you're going. And jumping with your little hoverboard can be a little difficult because like you're supposed to like splash through all the puddles and grind on everything that you possibly can, and like timing everything just right is not always the best, but it also doesn't really matter. Like, just experience the city, go on missions, do everything that you can, and hopefully you're going to be able to save Venice, because Venice is like in even more trouble, and Nova and her friends like have to do what they can to save the place. So,
did you? It's pretty cool.
I haven't finished the game yet.
Son of a bitch! It's $7. What do you think?
Absolutely. I found it to be very comparable to like Wayward Strand from last year, which was another similar game that you're walking around just talking to people, going on lots of fetch quests, like listening into like everything that's happening and making like your own narrative for stuff. So if you like that game from last year, definitely check this out. It's a lot of fun. As I said, a very chill experience, and for $8, it's totally worth it.
Cool. Sounds good. Even though it's only $7, not $8, you jerk.
I thought it was $7.99.
$6.99.
Oh. Well, you know what? Maybe tip him $1 somewhere.
You would. You should. Yeah, you should. That's a good idea.
Yeah, see?
Okay. I have one, good ideas. One more thing to talk about tonight is the DLC for Sniper Elite 5 Kraken Awakes, developed and published by Rebellion, released July 6th. This DLC for Sniper Elite 5 for $10.99, also a part of Season Pass 2 for $29.99. The final content drop for Season Pass 2 delivers an incredible new mission called Kraken Awakes that brings the story of Sniper Elite 5 to a close. Shocking new intel suggests that Project Kraken is still very much alive. Parts are being shipped to a military dock. It's now down to you to put an end to Kraken once and for all. Aki, the Kraken Awakes.
Yes, yes, it does, I guess.
That's how I tell my wife that I'm in the mood.
God.
I go Sniper Elite 5, you're like, Kraken Awakes DLC.
Except she's you're like what? The Kraken Awakes.
And then I drool on myself.
I'd believe that. So, in this, you are put in a, basically a port area, and your goal is to destroy everything and kill every last one of these bastard Nazis. So, you use your sniper rifle, and you blow their fucking brains out. It's fantastic. In this, a good chunk of this mission is blowing up some ships that are carrying the parts to the other place. So, and you have multiple ways of doing that. Each one has, I think, two different ways that you can do it. And they're not particularly hard. They're just like, oh, hey, let's move this item here, drop it, or hey, let's blow this thing up that's next to it, stuff like that. It's kind of like the main game and other pieces of DLC. There are no real unique enemies in this one. There's, you know, a couple generals that are like every other general in the game. The environment is a lot more claustrophobic. It has a somewhat wide open area at the port, but then you have to go into a base at a later point, and then it gets really claustrophobic, and I hope you brought a shotgun. It's very useful. This also comes with a few weapons, as per always, and I believe a new outfit for a character, but I don't remember which one, because it wasn't Marie. which is the character I play as. So, and yeah, it was a pretty good sniping game. I could have done with less cramped areas on the inside and more snipey, but it's just not bad. Really like the
snipey.
Yes, more snipey.
Have a way with wordy words.
Yeah, I didn't realize this was the last. I knew this was the last piece of DLC for season 2. I didn't realize that they weren't making a season pass 3. I honestly kind of expected a season pass 3.
Well, there might be a season pass 3. I mean, how many times have they ended the story only for more DLC to come out and be like, surprise, motherfucker?
There's more Nazis to kill.
With Sniper Elite, not so much. With, you know, the zombie army, more times than I'd like to remember.
The end of the game.
Surprise, bitch!
Oh,
yeah, that's why I haven't uninstalled it, because I'm like, I don't trust that this is the last season bad.
Surprise, motherfucker!
I love that one. Because it kind of leads off to where there might be another season pass. It could lead into the next game. It may not. I'm not really sure, because you never really know with this company on whether it's going to be, hey, here's another bunch of DLC, or if it's going to be, and this is where you're going to start off in the next game. So it's like, I'm keeping it just in case I've gotten every achievement in it, because of course I have. It's a sniping game. And yeah, so yeah, I really liked it.
All right, well, the DLC Kraken Awakes is $10.99, or the season pass is $29.99. What are your thoughts on everything?
I would never buy any of these as a solo piece of DLC, because they ask for a lot for not very much, because I played through this twice in like 4-ish hours at most. So, and once was on authentic difficulty, which is the hardest difficulty in the game, where you have to worry about bullet drop and wind speed and shit. Jeez. So yeah, it's not easy. So, you know, that took a long time to do, and it still only took me 4 hours to get through the first playthrough on the easiest difficulty, and then on the absolute hardest shit difficulty. So not getting a lot here for that $11, I think you said it was. Yep. So I always say just buy the season pass, because with the season pass, you're getting all the missions. I think there were 3, I believe, for the season pass, as well as a bunch of new skins for your weapons, for your characters, a handful of new weapons as well. I would always suggest get the season pass. Don't buy these individually. It's much cheaper to get the season pass.
Yeah, and we should point out, if you do buy individually, the $10.99 gets you the mission, a new pistol, the Mod 712 pistol, the Patriot weapon skin, and the American Airborne character skin for Carl. So it is more than just the mission. It's the mission and weapon pack, but, I mean, it's a mission pack for all intents and purposes.
Yeah. And if you get the actual season pass, usually it comes with more weapon skins, and I believe usually some more weapons as well from other packs that you get that don't have a mission in them. So I think it's always worth it to buy the season pass.
Yeah, let's see. Season Pass 2 includes 2 campaign missions, 6 weapon packs, 2 weapon skin packs, and 4 character skins. So there you go.
Yeah, the character skins are probably split between 1 for each of the mission packs, and then 2 on their own with other stuff. Most of the weapons probably came with other stuff. They're probably 1 or 2 in each mission pack. So yeah, I would just get the season pass. You're getting so much more, and I think it's just worth it.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, we are done. We are finished. That is it for this episode. We made it through another one.
Nice. Now are you going to tell me how babies are made?
No.
Would we like to touch on Exoprimal again?
I'd like to touch.
Next week or the week after. I figure we'll do it as a full update after you've had like a month or so with the game. Yeah, well,
I have to play this for the rest of the month.
You don't have to play it for the rest of the month. I'm just saying we'll do it in like a couple. Yeah.
Yeah. If for anyone
you're not liking it, are you?
Yeah, I've played almost 20 missions now, and I still don't have another mode, which it was suggested that after 15, we'd get like a 10v, like a big raid mode, and I haven't seen no big fucking raid mode, and I'm not happy. So
well, didn't the new game mode just like drop today or this week or something, like Savage, whatever?
I don't know. I didn't know there was something dropping. I will.
Yeah. I thought I had it in my notes, but I guess I didn't have it in my notes. But anyway, we'll touch on this again in another week or two. We'll talk more Exoprimal. But for now, big thanks to John and Matt at Graphite Lab for coming on, hanging out with us, chatting with us, keeping us company. Big thanks to Bree for coming on, hanging out with us, and chatting and doing her review. Mediocre thanks to you two for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. Think so.
I mean, don't let it go to your head. Jesus, you're gonna talk about this shit like all fucking year, aren't you?
Yeah.
He's a man, of course he is.
He was proud of us the one time.
Yeah, like
see, next Joe, week this is where you messed up. You gave a compliment to a guy. Guys get those so regularly that's all he'll focus on for like the next year.
Aki, I think it means that Joe really likes me. Do you think I should make my move?
Now I'm going to have to deal with this for the rest of the year. Thank you.
Aki, I'm so nervous. What if Joe doesn't respond?
I hope he doesn't.
Could you pass him a note during study hall?
Yes, I can do that.
Oh, thank God.